This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. So ever since I became a mom, there's one thing I've wondered about every single day. And it's captured beautifully in the new Pixar film, Inside Out.
So, how was the first day of school?
It was fine, I guess. I don't know.
Do you ever look at someone and wonder what is going on inside their head?
Yes, all the time, and especially with kids, because it can look like they're feeling so many different things in the blink of an eye. And as they approach puberty, aren't all kids just a confused, achingly poignant bundle of emotions? Yeah, they are. Here's Ed Catmull, president of Pixar and Walt Disney Animation Studios.
So when we started Inside Out as an example, it was just a concept, is we're going to do something with the emotion inside of a girl's head. We had no idea how to embody that. So the initial couple years were just exploring what might that even be.
What they came up with were joy, anger, fear, disgust, and sadness. Five brightly colored blobs inside the brain of an 11-year-old girl named Riley.
I'm joy. This is sadness. That's anger.
What?
This is disgust. And that's fear.
Ah!
We're Riley's emotions.
Woo-hoo!
Yay! These are Riley's memories. They're mostly happy, you'll notice, not to brag.
I wanted to maybe hold one.
What happened? Sadness?
She did something to the memory.
Is everything okay?
I don't know.
Pinch it back, Joy.
I'm trying.
Joy, no.
Let's
wait.
Go.
The core memories.
Ah! No.
Joy, anger, fear, disgust, and sadness, they each take turns at the control of Riley's mind as she goes through some pretty huge changes in her life. But is that actually how emotions really work in the brain? Well, Lisa Feldman Barrett is director of the Interdisciplinary Affective Science Laboratory at Northeastern University. She's a leading scientist on the study of emotion and author of the forthcoming book, How Emotions Are Made. And she joins us in the studio. Professor Barrett, welcome back to Radio Boston.
Thanks. Nice to be here.
So you wrote about this on WBUR's Common Health blog. You wrote about basically the blob theory, if I can call it, of emotions that's presented in Inside Out. Now, we're not saying that Pixar has any duty to be scientifically accurate, but are they onto something? Like, are there distinct regions of the brain where we can locate emotions?
I think it's very clear at this point that there are no distinct regions or blobs in the brain that are specifically dedicated to individual emotions. I think scientists believed for a long time that those specific brain regions were there and searched for them, but we now have hundreds of studies which show that that's not really how the brain is creating emotion.
It's not. Okay, well, let's play a little bit of tape here. This is from Inside Out, and it's introducing us to the character of Disgust, who's voiced by Mindy Kaling, the emotion of Joy, who's voiced by Amy Poehler, introduced us to Disgust, as Riley, as a little girl, is being fed broccoli by her father.
This is Disgust. She basically keeps Riley from being poisoned, physically and socially.
That is not brightly colored or shaped like a dinosaur. Hold on, guys. It's broccoli! Yuck!
Well, I just saved our lives. Ooh. Yeah, you're welcome.
Riley, if you don't eat your dinner, you're not gonna get any dessert.
Wait, did he just say we couldn't have dessert?
That's anger. Cares very deeply about things being fair.
So that's how you want to play it, old man? No dessert? Oh, sure. We'll eat our dinner right after you eat this.
So anger there, played by Lewis Black. But what we see and hear in that scene is Pixar kind of demonstrating that certain emotions kick in and take control. Now, if there aren't discrete areas of the brain where that is happening, what is actually happening in our brain? What do we see with imaging when, say, we feel those overwhelming feelings of disgust?
I think it's pretty clear at this point that the way to think about the brain is not as discrete regions or blobs, but really as a set of networks. So each person's brain has billions of neurons, which are wired together, in networks. And those networks are constantly intrinsically firing, even when you're asleep, even when you're daydreaming, even when there's no information coming necessarily from the world. So they're intrinsically active all the time. And when something happens in the world that grabs your attention, the intrinsic activity in these neurons, in these networks, changes a little bit.
Okay.
So
really,
the way to think about it are these networks are like the ingredients that you need to create all emotions, to create memories, to create thoughts.
Are the networks the same in every human being?
That's a great question. It depends on the level that you're measuring them at. So they do actually look pretty consistent across people, across cultures. Some of them people are born with, some of them develop with input from the world, some of them we share with animals, other animals, some of them we don't. But at a microscopic level, when we're looking at individual neurons, different neurons can work together to create the same network.
Uh-huh. Different, okay. Because, I mean, this flies in the face of, you know, a lot of brain science for the past, or science for the past 50 years or so. Because, I mean, my layperson's understanding was like, okay, well, primal feelings like disgust, fear, and anger, like, those are supposed to live in the amygdala. And you're saying that that's not true, that basically various parts of the brain are acting together to produce what we sense as anger?
Yes, exactly. What we experience as anger, we construct out of a set of ingredients that are basically in the brain. And the amygdala is a great example. We did a large summary of all of the scientific studies used brain imaging with emotion when people were feeling emotion. And we found that the amygdala is consistently active, for example, when people are feeling fear about 30% of the studies. And it's also consistently active in disgust and in happiness and in anger and in sadness. It's also the amygdala's active when, if I just showed you something novel that you'd never seen before that was completely neutral, like a face, you would see robust amygdala response. Mm.
Well, let me ask you a question about the fact that the main character in this film is Riley, who's an 11-year-old, right? She's on the threshold of becoming a teenager. And in the movie, the emotions of joy and sadness sort of get lost in her brain, in a different part of her brain, leaving fear, disgust, and anger to really fend for themselves, which sounds like a lot of 11-year-olds that just about anyone knows. So let's play a scene in which fear, disgust, and anger are trying to figure out what to do.
Joy would know what to do.
That's it. Until she gets back, we just do what Joy would do.
Great idea. Anger, fear, disgust. How are we supposed to be happy?
Hey, Riley, I've got good news. I found a junior hockey league right here in San Francisco. And get this, tryouts are tomorrow after school. What luck, right?
Hockey.
Uh-oh, what do we do?
Guys, here, you pretend to be Joy.
Won't it be great to be back out on the ice?
Oh, yeah, that sounds fantastic.
What was that? That wasn't anything like Joy!
Because I'm not Joy?
Yeah, no kidding.
In fact, that was discussed at the helm of Riley's brain in the Pixar movie. So, I mean, what about the brains of 11-year-olds, of pre-adolescents? I mean, I feel like they must be wired differently than adults because they're not even fully wired. I mean, do certain emotions genuinely take a back seat in those networks we were talking about earlier?
I think it's pretty clear that to experience an emotion, let me say it this way. Every moment of your waking life, you have feelings. You can feel pleasant. You can feel unpleasant. You can feel really activated or wound up. You could feel really calm. Those feelings really are not just part of emotions. They're part of every experience that you have. So all of us really have the wiring for those really basic feelings when we're born. And that's some of the wiring we also share with other animals. But what people are doing is they're making sense. The brain networks are making sense of those very general feelings as anger or as fear or as sadness, depending on what's going on in the situation. So an 11-year-old probably has some similar concepts to an adult, like anger, sadness, fear, disgust, happiness, learn those concepts really early in life. And So an 11-year-old would have those. But an 11-year-old might not, for example, be an expert on the distinction between irritation and frustration. Mm. They might not experience Schadenfreude. In fact, one of the really nice things about the film is at the end, Riley starts to experience combinations of emotion. And that's not something that you would see in a younger child.
Right. Well, there's one last clip I want to play. And this is where the emotions in Riley's head are actually really trying to figure out how to best act in a certain situation. And it's when the character of Riley, her dad, suddenly just has to leave a happy moment and take a business meeting. So let's listen.
See you, sweetie.
Dad just left us.
Oh, he doesn't love us anymore. That's sad. I should drive, right? Joy, what are you doing?
Give me one second. You know what I've realized? Riley hasn't had lunch, remember?
Hey, I saw a pizza place down the street. Maybe we could try that.
Pizza sounds delicious.
Pizza?
Yes, pizza.
Great, that's good. What the heck is that?
Who puts broccoli on pizza?
That's it. I'm done.
Congratulations, San Francisco. You've ruined pizza. First the Hawaiians, and now you.
Anger seems to get the best lines here. The reaction to broccoli on pizza. But the reason why I wanted to bring this up is because Paul Ekman, who has been a real big thinker in the field of emotion science for half a century, he advised on this film. And one thing that he notes is he says that the film does a good job in showing how emotions actually tend to organize rather than disrupt rational thinking. And isn't that what we're hearing in that clip?
I think Paul is definitely right that emotions have typically been seen as disruptive, and actually they are a source of wisdom. I think that's absolutely right. And we do see that in various times in this film. What's not correct is the idea that an event occurs, you know, Riley perceives it, or the little creatures in her head perceive it, and then they react with an emotion that then controls behavior. That's how it seems to us, but that's actually not what's happening in the brain. Brains are predictive. They aren't reactive. So what's really happening are your networks, which are intrinsically kind of churning away, creating all your various experiences, are in a moment-to-moment sense predicting what's going to happen next. And when an emotion is constructed, it goes along with a behavior. And you only become aware of that behavior, you know, some milliseconds after it's already been initiated in your brain. Huh. So to you, it feels like you're reacting. But actually, that's not at all how your brain is wired. That's not what's happening inside the skull. It's just not how it works.
Well, Lisa Feldman Barrett is director of the Interdisciplinary Affective Science Laboratory at Northeastern University. Her forthcoming book is called How Emotions Are Made, and there's a link to her Common Health post about Inside Out at RadioBoston.org. Lisa Feldman Barrett, thank you so much.
My pleasure.
Oh, yeah, more than a feeling. You can hear about all your feelings here on Radio Boston. There's a lot more ahead. Stay with us. I'm Anthony Brooks.
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.